So good morning. Good morning. Hey. How about that? So some new faces. Do you need your hat on?
No.
No. Generally, they say, for some reason in the Buddhist tradition, it's said if you need your hat on, it's okay for health reasons. In general, it's considered when one receives teachings to be very simple without a hat, but if you need it for, if you need it to keep your, like, you're like me.
No, I got plenty upstairs.
No, I was talking to the gentleman behind you. You've got plenty upstairs. He's the one, the gentleman behind you is more like me. So, let's do a little meditation. Anyone here who's never meditated before? Ever done meditation? So you know slightly what that means. So sit comfortably. Relax your body. And let your mind also relax without worrying about anything, without being agitated about something exciting. Just focus on your respiration. Notice that as you breathe in, there's a continuity of breaths that you usually are unaware of. It's just taking place in the background. You're focused on something else, either what you're looking at or listening to or tasting. The breathing is going on, but now watch it without controlling it if you can. Occupy your attention with that to the exclusion of other thoughts so that your mind can begin to calm down. Don't anticipate and imagine what the breath is like. Actually, just watch it. You may have done that successfully for a couple of breaths, but then become bored and your mind started to multitask, think of other things. So bring that attention back, invest it in just observing the breathing, especially the endpoints when it changes direction. You may notice the breathing becoming very regular and subtle. And if your mind gets a little bit distracted onto something else, you may notice suddenly you're breathing in a different way, a little more deeply. Again, let go of the tension of your body as you're breathing. Your shoulders, your neck, your back, your legs, whatever. Like this cycle of breathing in and out, everything that we experience goes through such change. We meet friends, meet people, like breathing in. We are with them for some time, like the abiding of the wind, just as the air as we breathe in, the breath. And then we separate slowly, like the breathing out. We accumulate possessions, wealth. We have it for some time. It's inevitably dispersed. We may rise in position for some time, keep that, and then fall, like the breathing in and breathing out. Having been born, like the inhalation, remaining for some time, we inevitably have to decline, grow old, pass away. Body's a little bit relaxed and your mind has calmed. Put your attention now on the nature of the mind itself. That mental consciousness within which you're thinking, investigating. Being at an outdoor cafe, sitting there watching the other people around you, maybe some people, pedestrians walking, some people sitting, the thoughts in your mind, some of them might be there in the background continually, some general emotional state or thought that's present, others come and go by association. See if you can turn your attention away from the thoughts as objects within the space of your mind to the space itself, the mind, spaciousness of the mind that allows thoughts to come and go. Focusing on that, other things, other thoughts, your attention to the pedestrians or the people sitting in the cafe dwindles, and you're focusing instead on the spaciousness within which the thoughts are arising, the nature of the mind. this clean, clear nature is always present in our mind, even when things are chaotic, even when there's great sorrow or excitement, problems or happiness. If you're familiar with this, you can let go of preoccupation with other events in your mind, find some equilibrium, again, just looking within, turning your attention toward the mental consciousness. See if you can let go of the appearance of your body by not paying attention to it, asking yourself, what is this appearance of the body arising in? It's arising within the spaciousness of your mind that allows it to appear. I have a unique opportunity right now of having the ability to perceive this resource, this clear light nature of my mind, within which I can develop spiritual qualities, get rid of my bad habits as I recognize they're just appearances within the mind. Make a dedication or a motivation that this morning I'm going to participate in the Buddhist talk, listening, weighing the words and their meaning, accepting what seems correct and leaving what doesn't. Meditating on any insight that I get. I'm going to do so to heal myself in a spiritual way, not simply for this life alone or for myself alone, but for however long it takes to benefit all living beings. I'm going to work to better myself for their welfare so that I'm less a problem for others and can actually help them eventually. For that reason, I'm going to listen to the Dharma teachings this morning that were given initially by the Buddha and later practiced and expounded upon by his followers, the Sangha. So within that state of mind, relax again, bring your attention back to the present. We have a full house in this room. Anyone have... Okay. Anyone have any questions?
Can we dismiss the kids?
Yeah.
Thank you.
At ease. Did you meditate? Did you try to meditate? Did you try to meditate? You did? Okay. You can go. Thank you. Oh. He's so tall. He was one of the children. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was just the ones over there. Patrick, there's some chairs further up here. There's some chairs further up here if you want. So anyone have any observation or comment, question about the meditation? How was your, the gentleman who's like me, how was your meditation? How was your meditation? Did you try?
Yes.
Okay. Were you successful, or could you concentrate, or what happened?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yes.
Okay. So I kind of forgot where I was, and I had to like check in and go, are we still meditating?
Yeah.
I mean, I could hear what was going on. So I guess that's drifting off, but I wasn't really thinking about anything.
It can be good, it can be drifting off also, depends. Sometimes when we're concentrating, if we're successful in looking at the mind, you can kind of, when you're focusing on one thing, just like in everyday life, if you're really focused on one thing, someone may be saying something to you in the background, and it actually you hear it, but you don't pay any attention to it because your attention is here.
Right.
So that can be good. If you're actually focusing on the mind, you might, in a sense, forget the body or forget where you are. Wake up and say, what am I doing here?
Right.
But if it's, it can be also an instance of, like you say, just sort of drifting off and falling asleep.
Yeah.
There's a difference between real meditation is not simply having no thoughts, because even a goat cow chewing their cud, maybe not having any thoughts, is not considered meditation. Meditation means basically familiarizing your mind with a worthwhile, a wholesome state, something that's beneficial spiritually. You could use the word loosely and say you're meditating on anger, you know, as you think about something. They did this. That's, from a Buddhist perspective, that's not meditation. Meditation means familiarizing with a wholesome state, something that's beneficial. Anyone else have a question or observation? Yes. They're going to bring a...
Well, I wanted to ask about that point where you asked us to be observers of our mind.
Yeah, it's something that you may not have encountered before, is that right?
Right. I wondered I found myself trying to picture or a little spot inside my brain that I kind of went down in, and then from there looked out at the rest of the stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious, how do you do that? Observe your mind.
Yeah. So here is good. I'm glad to hear you say that, because it means you were trying. From a Buddhist perspective, we're not talking about the brain. We're talking about a subjective experience that we call mind, that when you're thinking of your mom or your dad or your kids or your friends, you're not consciously going to the brain. Maybe the brain is involved in some functions. But the mind itself, the subjective experience, is what we're turning our attention away from, focusing outside or focusing into, let's say, within a mental experience, focusing to some concept or idea or plan or worry, emotions that arise. They're almost, in a sense, objects of the mind. We're turning our attention inward to look at the actual nature of that which is knowing those things. And it's not easy to do. Like an example I've given a couple times, if you go to an aquarium, which I'm told there's not one here in Raleigh, is this right? You have to go somewhere else. What's your name?
Scott.
Scott, okay. Good, you put it on the microphone. You're on the record now, Scott.
And more.
If Scott and I were to go to the aquarium and the big wall of glass behind which is some clear water and the fish swimming in that, you say, George, look at the water. What water? I just see the fish. Would you agree that might be, at first, that might be some perception because the water is transparent and therefore it's not that you can, it's not something objective that you can look at directly. Oops. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I thought it went off. But you say, well, George, there's water here because that's what the fish are swimming in. And then if I notice the objects of the fish, let's say, or the seaweed or whatever, I can kind of understand, even though the water is still transparent, I start to perceive it in a sense, letting go of my focus on the fish, and then I can start to sense the space between the fish. A little bit a beginning exercise that one can do with the mind. Just notice the contents of the mind. Some of it may be thoughts, judgments, inner conversation. Some of it may be like images. If you imagine something like the what's going on today? Today is what, Sunday, so the pro football game, you may be imagining someone throwing a pass or something like an image in your mind, or some emotional state, maybe irritation. What's this guy talking about? You know, or some longing. You see me having a sip of this, you think, some desire to have something to drink. All sorts of things can be, in a sense, objects of the mind, the mental experience. Here we're trying to turn inward, and it's a very different experience because in all of our lives, maybe many of us, we've never turned inward. Sometimes people are familiar with the term introspection, but we might still be doing that. You know what I mean by introspection? What would we say? Who here might engage sometime in introspection and have a definition of what it might mean to you? What does introspection mean to you? Oh.
Okay. Well, for me, it's like a deliberate attempt to look at my thoughts and feelings and have some kind of it's more of an intellectual process.
Right. Did you hear what she said? Mm-hmm. So even that, what's your name?
Bronwyn.
Bronwyn.
Yes.
So even that, Bronwyn, it's still, the way that you're saying it, it actually is how most people think of it, I think. You're looking at the thoughts and feelings and analyzing why they're just thinking about them. That too is not the same kind of introspection that's meant here. where you turn to the mind itself and there's no objects.
Right.
You're still, that's usually, I think, what people mean by introspection. Oh, why do I have those feelings about Charlie or, you know, this or that? Here, letting go of that and asking yourself, what's the consciousness within which these images, these feelings are arising? So inter, mm-hmm. You know, looking inward, spection, not speculating, but looking inward. So it's a little bit different than what ordinarily we might mean by introspection, which I think you're quite accurate for what people often mean by that.
And I mean, for me also, it often has often looking backward rather than looking at what's happening at the moment.
Backwards in time?
In time.
Yeah. Right. Again,
projecting.
It's not necessarily looking into the mind, though, to look at what's the nature of the mind.
The nature, and looking at past actions.
So this is what I was, so Scott's question was, what am I supposed to do? We're not looking at the brain. We're just being present with the subjective experience of consciousness. And what you can do is let go of your attention to the eye. You can scan your senses and say, I'm not, although the eye consciousness may still be perceiving something, I'm not going to pay attention to that. Not the ear, the sounds that the ears are hearing. I'm not going to pay attention to those objective things, or the smells, the tastes, the feelings, maybe the pains or good feelings in your body. Probably mostly pains. If you have good feelings, you might have had too much coffee this morning or something that you're, or an extra pain reliever or something, if you have especially good feeling. Instead of any of those objective things, just watching the thoughts first of all, maybe introspection in the way that Bronwyn has meaning. Not focusing on the brain, but as though one part, a little part of your mind, your consciousness, is watching the rest, like someone at a cafe looking around, watching all the other people, and then recognizing that there's space between them, the same way in the analogy of the aquarium, looking at the water between the fish, and actually then beginning to understand there's some spaciousness there. Difference here, if I focus on the water in the aquarium, the fish are still there. Whereas if I focus on the spaciousness of the mind, the other thoughts, the objects, the feelings, they begin to quiet down and disappear like a cloud in a spring day. When the sun shines on it, warms it up, the condensation evaporates, and the cloud seems, in some cases, disappears. Have you ever experienced it? It's not always the case, but not because the cloud was blown away by the wind, not that you force these thoughts away. They themselves, if you don't pay attention to them, you don't give credence to follow the emotional states, they'll quiet down and disappear. And that's what I was trying to lead us into doing. If you have the interest to do that, it's very, very useful meditation on the nature of the mind. In fact, it's the subject of the weekend seminar that I'm continuing this afternoon, which we started a couple of days ago. Okay. Yes.
So can we say that you're talking about two types of consciousness? You said the consciousness, the universal consciousness, and my own consciousness to get it in touch with that universal consciousness. Is that what you're talking about? So my own consciousness?
In short, no.
No?
That's not what I'm saying. So from when we begin to try to practice a spiritual practice like this, engage in a spiritual practice, I think like Christ said in the Bible, I'm not sure the exact context, he probably said it in several contexts, you have to be like a child. You have to be, what does it say? You had to die and be reborn. Who's mm-hmm. No, it's Christian liturgy, yeah. Something like that. So you have to have a beginner's mind, like in, we talk about Zen mind, beginner's mind. Don't have any assumptions of what the mind is. Like here's the thing, the universal mind. From Buddhist point of view, there's nothing other than our own consciousness that we experience. We may know that other people have consciousness, but there's not some great collective universal consciousness that we're trying to tap into. We're just trying to investigate our own consciousness, our own mind. And although we have five sense consciousnesses, we have an eye sense, eye consciousness that knows, sees shapes and colors. We have an ear consciousness, nose consciousness, taste consciousness, tactile consciousness. Each have its own sphere of objects that it knows. I can't see with my sense, with my body consciousness, you know, my tactile consciousness. I can't taste with my nose consciousness, although taste and smell are related, you know, that that's another thing. So we withdraw our attention away from the five sense consciousnesses and just like a turtle that you, I had this experience recently when I walked, and I live north of Asheville in the mountains where I have a retreat cabin. I was walking down the road and there was this big, I think it was a snapping turtle. It was like about this big. He must have come out of the river. He was crossing the road and I wanted to try to keep the cars from, you know, coming around the bend too quickly, running him over. And I came close and I realized I didn't know how to, he was ready to snap at me. But at a certain point, another fellow came along and the turtle withdrew its arms and head into the shell. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Even a little filter. So, like that, you can imagine at first withdrawing your attention away from the eye, ear, nose, ears, nose, tongue, and tactile consciousness, like withdrawing into just the mental consciousness within. Maybe at the, not here, not to the brain, maybe more to the center of the heart, not the beating heart, but the center of the body, around what we call the heart chakra. It's not essential, but that's sometimes helpful, because at the time of sleep, your senses do absorb the energy that sustains them, do absorb to an area around there. It's just like hunkering down in a cave, or like when the kids are going crazy or your neighbors are making a lot of noise, you go into some little room. You just hunker down. You have to do your taxes or something in order to concentrate, get rid of all those other distractions. So just watch within that little cave of your mind. Watch what's happening within your mind. Yeah, it takes, to really get some experience, you have to do it for some time. I don't mean just a minute. You know, we have to do it again and again, longer times. Begin to watch what frequency our mind. Maybe what frequency our mind is dissatisfaction or strong desire, anger, pride, you know, a sense of injustice, you know, I'm not recognized, I'm not loved, sense of longing, all sorts of things that inhabit our mind, emotional states, thoughts of the past, the future, which sometimes cascade one after the other. One association, one thought comes, the mind has some association with that memory that brings up another thought. You go on these long journeys. Just watch that process. Watch your mind. But beyond...
It's like exploring,
yeah,
who you are, like going and...
Well, don't add yet. You were saying, is it like the universal consciousness is even, don't even say explaining who you are. Maybe later you're going to explore who you are. Here you're just exploring the mind. Whether the mind is you or not, that's another question. So just just watching all of those thoughts and then recognizing that their very presence through their very presence you can infer that the mind has a certain spaciousness. Otherwise they wouldn't be able to be present, and they come and go. It's not like they go like on a windy day the wind blows the cloud away. It's not like the thoughts are disappear out of your mind, you know, into some other place in your body or something. It's almost as though they just dissolve back into the mind itself, like a cloud on a spring day with sun evaporates the condensation, the white cloud, and it just seems to disappear. And they can emerge from the mind. So you start to get a feeling of the fundamental nature of our consciousness, which from a Buddhist perspective is called clear and knowing, clarity and knowing. One aspect of its nature is this non-obstructability, its clarity. Another aspect is its cognitive ability to know, to experience things. It knows the thoughts. And if you're looking at the mind, the little part of the mind that's looking at the clear light nature knows that clear light nature of the mind. So this is, from a Buddhist perspective, this would be what I'm calling introspection. Not introspection in the sense that Bronwyn was talking about. Not introspection in the way that Scott was saying, looking at the brain or trying to go into some part there, but just experiencing the mind without any preconceptions at first, like what it is. It's like an exploration through your experimentation, discovering what it is. Okay, so that's enough of that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I thought it might be worthwhile to ask a question. Is there anyone here who doesn't have a problem in their own life or has not had a problem at some point with anger? Someone doesn't have a problem? I've asked this question here before. I remember in a seminar that I held in Tokyo many years ago, and I asked that question, and there were some gentlemen, they almost looked, when in hindsight, almost looked, they had shark skin suits on, they almost looked like Yakuza or something like this. Anyway, they were sitting, and they had young ladies next to them, so they might have been Yakuza, I don't know. Anyway, I asked this, everyone in the audience, like this, maybe it was about this size participants, everyone like yourselves, no one said, I have no problem, except two or three of these guys in the shark skin suits. And it was funny because the ladies next to them went, like, are you kidding me? You have no problem with anger? So if we recognize that, and it's something, even if we've matured, maybe we had a problem with anger as a kid, or at some point in our life we may have worked something out. Still, we know we have the potential to become irritated, and that if that irritation is fueled, we can get angry. Sometimes when I point out from a Buddhist perspective, anger is what we call a disturbing mind. Something to be avoided. Some people will object, and maybe some of you will say, "Oh, actually, anger has its value." Does anyone have that feeling?
Yes.
Yeah. Who said that? Mm-hmm. You. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Anger's good, right? So why? Let me ask. Oh yeah. You haven't spoken yet. Yeah. What's your name back there?
Jory.
Or story? Either way, yeah. That's it. Call me what you want.
I found that anger has a high value for me as an indicator emotion.
As an indicator emotion.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
That's like kind of my shorthand for an emotion that's very powerful, and it indicates that something else is going on, that there's something that I haven't described or I don't have words for or I can't articulate, which I just said the same thing three ways, but that there's something going on that I need to explore that I haven't asked the right questions yet. And so anger is one of those emotions for me. If I find myself in anger, I know that there's more of a story that I'm operating with that I just haven't been willing to admit or I haven't asked questions about.
Good observation. But from a Buddhist perspective, would you want to, or say from your own perspective, would you, although you notice that, you value it because it gives you a warning that you, there's something that you have to address, right? The underlying cause of that anger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that anger itself, would that, is that something in and of itself that benefits you, other than indicating that there's something you have to address?
There have been times when I experienced anger as a catharsis. Like that there was a lot of emotional energy stored up, and it you know, flared up as anger, and I felt better for having extinguished that emotion, like after it had passed.
So you felt better after extinguishing that emotion?
After it had passed, after letting it, like experiencing it and letting it pass.
After experiencing the anger, you felt some relief?
Yeah.
Okay. But the anger itself was not pleasant.
There's a difference between not pleasant and not beneficial.
Sorry, I talked over you.
Sorry, like you were asking as not pleasant. Like there is a difference between pleasant and beneficial. I've experienced something as not pleasant.
I'm asking pleasant, beneficial. So, from a Buddhist perspective, anger is something, is a state of mind where we, part of our mind has focused on something which is unpleasant, say someone has insulted us or hasn't given us what we wanted or has cheated us or something, and our mind exaggerates, adds to that discomfort in such a way that the consciousness becomes disturbed because of that and wants to be free of that irritation. So what you're describing is follows along with the Buddhist understanding of anger. From a Buddhist point of view, anger, let me put it this way, wouldn't it be better if you never even had to address that cathartic state because you never had the anger? Did the anger actually benefit you in any way? When you're in an angry state, you can't really make good decisions. Like if you're driving on the road and you're getting angry, you could very easily swerve and, you know, engage in, what do they call it, road rage, or... Anyone ever get into that? Okay, this is good, yeah. Maybe you've been the recipient or you've been the participant, the instigator of road rage. The point here is that as we begin to watch the mind and its ability to develop good qualities that can lead us to bring benefit and so forth to ourselves and to others, we notice that anger is not a state that we would call positive. You can say with anything that's negative, you can say it has some positive quality in that in observing that, we have to clean up our act. You know, we realize there might be some underlying cause, and that was one of your points, that it gave you a cue, or I can't remember what you said, to there was something you had to address. So that's true. If you notice anger arising, you have to look at what the cause of that is. But anger itself doesn't benefit us. What I was trying to elicit was what some people in the past, when I talked about anger, they actually said, oh, anger is my friend, my benefit, because without anger, without me getting angry, people will take advantage of me. Is that a state of mind that might occur to people sometimes? You know, unless I'm, you know, get out of my, you know, get out of here. Now, from a Buddhist perspective, if someone is abusing you in any way, and nowadays we talk about, we recognize more and more the different kinds of abuse that men and women can experience. Buddhism doesn't say that you just have to be passive and accept any abuse that comes. That's not the alternative to anger. The alternative is that you can be resolute. You can say, no, I did give you a $50 bill, not a $5 bill. I want the change for the $50 bill, you know, without getting angry. If you get angry, you are hurting yourself. You're creating some disturbance of the mind that prevents you from actually dealing with the situation in a constructive way. Do you see a difference between the two? That is to say, keeping a calm state of mind that doesn't exaggerate the danger that you're, or the discomfort that you're experiencing, or in one point, one part of the mind might be holding on to the situation as interminable. Is it not recognizing that it will change, and because of that impatience, which is what we often call anger, right? Impatience. Because of that, not recognizing that it just gives it time, it'll go. You act out and speak out in ways that are destructive to your reputation, to your relationship with others. Sometimes loving relationship that's been engendered over a long period of time, good relationship with other people, with just one sharp word or just some outburst of anger can be damaged. Have you had any experience like that? Either you yourself said something that caused damage, or someone else said something to you and you your opinion of them, maybe a loving, friendly sense of them, changed in a short time. There are deeper shortcomings of anger. From a Buddhist perspective, it leaves an imprint in the mind. We could say it creates karma. You know the word karma? Mm-hmm. Action. So, like I said, Newton's third law of motion, every action has an equal and opposite reaction in the world. Do you know that? Mm-hmm. On the skating rink, if you think you're going to, so someone else is on skates next to you, you think you're going to push them away. If you push them, you also move away, right? You sort of, like, in the, knowing this is true is what allows our astronauts to go into space. The rocket shoots out exhaust down here, so the rocket goes up. Equal and opposite reaction. Similar in the mental realm, when we create actions, like Christ said in the Bible, ye reap what ye sow. If you leave within your mind the action of anger, you will eventually, not immediately, but you will eventually experience some reaction to that. Sometimes you can, people say instant karma. You know, you say something bad to someone and they slug you. Say, oh, instant karma. Generally, though, the bad words that you said, they will have their harvest. You will sow the results of those sometime later. Maybe not even this lifetime, future lifetimes. Besides that, just on the practical realm, it can ruin our reputation, causes our mind to be unclear, we don't make good decisions. Beyond that, the karmic consequences of creating the cause for future suffering, and of course, the immediate causes of losing your reputation and friendships, but on another level, also anger has, it's like fire. It has the ability to destroy virtuous energy that we've created in our mind. Good karma, you might say, that has been left its imprint in our mind that will eventually result, if not altered, eventually result in some sort of pleasure in the future, that is burned up in the same way that leaves are burned in your fall. Can you do that in Raleigh? Can you burn? You can't burn. Okay, you don't know what I'm talking about then. You lived all your life in Raleigh. There's something, you know, some places that you can have a little fire, bonfire, and you toss the leaves in.
Yep.
So, okay. So you toss the leaves in and they sort of like what was there substantial is sort of just soot or ashes afterwards. Like that, anger can destroy the potency of the virtuous seeds within our mind. So it from a Buddhist point of view, it's the most destructive of all of the emotions. It's more destructive than attachment. Do you think attachment is bad? Maybe you don't think attachment is bad. You might think attachment is what keeps me together with my friends, you know, my loved ones, and so forth. From a Buddhist perspective, real successful relationships are those that are not based on attachment, but are based on real love. You might think that love is intimately related with attachment. Can you love without attachment?
Yes.
Okay, you're better than some. My teacher Lama Yeshe many years ago gave a teaching in, I think it was in Australia, to some Christian ministers. They had invited him to talk about Buddhism, and Lama talked about real meaning of love without attachment. And apparently the head afterwards came up, you know, the master of ceremonies, and thanked Lama with the microphone, saying, "Yeah, let's give it." But we all know it's impossible to love without attachment. That was what the minister said. Oh, thank you, Tibetan Lama. Yeah, but we all know that it's possible to love without attachment. So it's very easy to mistake, like, say, attachment. If I'm attached to chocolate, I might say, "I love chocolate." Right? Love, from a Buddhist perspective, is what in Christianity is also called what? Agape? So, you know, just wanting others to be happy, having seen them as a worthy recipient of our affection, having a heartwarming feeling for them. So between the two, anger and attachment, anger is more destructive because it burns up the power of our virtuous energy. Attachment is more long-lasting. You know, if you have an angry episode, sometimes it may take a while, but you can get over that. But if your heart is broken out of attachment, sometimes that takes much longer than overcoming an angry episode, just to give a gross example. Does that make sense? Why is that? Because attachment is like oil. Like if we go to a restaurant and I spill some salt on the tablecloth, the waiter might come with a little brush and brush off the salt and pepper, and the tablecloth looks immaculate. Maybe it might be some little speck, but it looks more immaculate, right? That's kind of like anger. Anger can be there for some time, but can be eliminated relatively easily if you apply yourself. On the other hand, attachment is like the olive oil. If I tip over the olive oil or the balsamic vinegar on the white tablecloth, no matter how much he brushes, it's sunk into the fabric, right? So attachment, because it's it takes an object, attachment is engaged not with something which is unpleasant, like anger, where you've exaggerated the qualities of the unpleasant objects so that the mind becomes uneased. Attachment, on the other hand, has experienced something pleasant and exaggerated its qualities, and almost as though the mind absorbs into it, wanting to have it, wanting to enjoy the pleasure of it. Whereas in anger, it's almost like your mind wants to be away from the object, so it's easier to get rid of that anger because you can forget the object without any problem. You don't want to think of the object. But in the case of attachment, you're thinking, but even though I can't have it, it would be so nice to have that, you know, to be the friends or to embrace or to eat or to have that power. So attachment, like oil, sinks into its object and is more long-lasting. Sometimes when we talk about, in the Theravada tradition, one of the systems of Buddhist, you know, the Buddha taught that is still existing in the world today, mainly in Sri Lanka and Thailand and Burma, they say the root cause of all of our existence is a kind of attachment, thirsting, wanting to have, continue to life, you know, to have life. That's what impels us at the time of death to take another rebirth and so forth. So there's a sense that attachment is something long, long lasting. That's an enterprise, although it's not as destructive in creating big negative karma, and it doesn't destroy our merit when we have attachment. It's long lasting, and it is one of the major problems. But here in the case of anger, it's something that is one of the greatest obstacles to spiritual growth, and it's something that we can address. So I'm just going to remind you, I mentioned this teaching of the Kadampa Geshes. You know, this is called Kadampa Center, right? Mm-hmm. The Kadampa, you know who the Kadampas were? Do you know? Mm-hmm. Do you know who the Kadampas were?
No.
So this center is named after delayed reaction. So the Kadampas were followers of a being who this statue represents, Atisha, with a red hat. He was a great Indian Buddhist who studied many, many years, a great scholar, but then went off to really develop good heart and compassion. Long journey, I think, took 13 months to get to Indonesia through many, you know, at that time around maybe 900 AD. Studied for 13 years, came back, and was able to bring the teachings to Tibet and revivify the Buddhism that was there. His followers were called the Kadampas, like this center is called the Kadampa Center. And these followers of Atisha were very pure practitioners. And one of the meditations they had was four essential points to overcome anger. Sort of the oral tradition for antidotes to anger. Because basically, if we understand the mechanism, we experience something which is unpleasant. Our mind exaggerates that in various ways, as though, and in sort of imputing upon it, like say if someone says something to you, you might from your own side think that the reason you're just saying that because you want me to do this or that, or you're just saying that for, you're just imagining something that's not necessarily really there. You know what I mean by projecting upon it? So we project upon the unpleasant object or state qualities that it doesn't really have. And then it becomes more irritating. right? That's when the anger arises. Sometimes it's a little bit irritating. It's okay. Oh, that's, I don't like that. Okay. But if I don't like that because it's this, and then in exaggerating, you get to the point where the irritation becomes a state of anger. You've exaggerated it, and you want to either flee or push it away in some way. So one of the Kadampa Geshe's, Kadampa followers said there were four main ways that you do this. I'm trying to think which order to say them to. Well, one is that you forget about impermanence, that things are changing, and you project upon the object or situation a sense of permanence that makes you more impatient. You know, you can't bear it because it's almost as though it's going to be enduring. The antidote to that is an understanding of change and impermanence. Understanding that famous verse you hear in various spiritual traditions, this too will change. Have you ever heard that?
Mm-hmm.
This too will change.
Will
pardon?
This too will pass.
This too will pass. What did I say? Yeah, this too will pass. This too will change. This too will pass. That kind of understanding that things will eventually change, and even a finer understanding that even in the moment they're changing. Even looking at the angry situation and your eyes are getting big at the other person, just remembering that even right now you can change. You're changing, they're changing. Change the appearance of your face, and also they relax. You see what I mean? So even in the moment, understanding that things are changing momentarily, even in a relationship, you can avoid getting angry by withdrawing that projection through wisdom. So as you withdraw that projection of permanence that's exaggerating it and making it more irritable, you know, this will pass, I can bear with this. That's one method. Another method is the method of love and compassion. Recognizing that the other individual, right, so the projection here is that this other person is the cause of my before talking about love and compassion, karma. First the mind thinks the other person is the source of my problem, it's their fault, right? Understanding that there's no way that you could be experiencing this unpleasant situation unless you created the karma for it in the past starts to withdraw that projection of fault being on the other person. This is what the Kadampa Geshe's, they gave a name for this remedy. It was called the arrow and the target. Have you heard that before? What does that mean?
I believe it means when something unpleasant happens, it's like an arrow. Don't put another arrow on yourself to make it worse.
Another one.
It's somewhere like, in the vicinity of what they meant. That's not exactly right. Who, someone else thought the. Okay. I didn't get it right. Here, what it means is, from the Kadampa point of view, in the past, we created some actions, like shooting an arrow. We've left the seed in our mind, like that arrow is still going, hasn't lost its efficacy. Once a cooperative condition comes up, that arrow can land and we experience the fruition, we reap the harvest of that negative action that we created in the past as something unpleasant. But it wasn't, the other person is not the primary cause, because at the airport, the steward, or is that politically correct now? You can't say steward. Pardon?
Sure.
I can say, okay. I'm not sure. You have to be really careful. They say, oh, I'm sorry, announcing flight 23 to Nirvana has been delayed. You know, there'll be some people who hear that and who go, oh, okay. There's some people who go, maybe even you yourself have experienced, what are you talking about? Why didn't you, you know, anger arises. So it's not as though the situation is experienced necessarily by everyone with anger. It's not as though it's an anger-provoking situation. What is it like when your kids argue and they say, he made me angry? No, she made me angry. It's not they didn't make it. They did something that you didn't like and you got angry yourself. From a Buddhist perspective, even deeper reason, not only did you get angry, you created the karma in the past. You shot the arrow. To experience this is something unpleasant, and therefore feeling that extra irritation, projecting upon it something that was intolerable, you got angry. So recognizing that the other person is not the prime cause of your anger, of the irritation, of the unpleasantness, you can withdraw that projection upon them that exacerbates your anger. It could be all of these factors. It could be just one of them that's the primary thing that's causing you to be irritated. One is thinking, you know, it's their fault. So withdrawing that, the mind can be a little bit calmer, a little bit more circumspect. Doesn't mean you're immediately going to feel good about the situation. You may still be irritated, but you may not fall into the state of anger where your mind becomes disturbed and you're saying, I'm going to call the airline and have you fired. Have you ever done that? Okay, I won't ask. Okay. Another one. Okay, so the one I was going to say before. Are you okay? You look like you. I thought you were getting. No. The girl in front of you, she's turning around. Yeah, I thought you were getting bored. You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So, no, it's just sort of like, what's he talking about now? I'm getting irritated. So I thought you might have been getting angry at what I was talking about. So, impermanence, the arrow in the target, which is talking about karma, then love and compassion. Rather than projecting upon the other person, what was that TV series, Friends? Do you remember that? A long, long time ago? Maybe they even have reruns now. Some kind of series like that, there was some expression that people said, when they got angry and someone said, oh, why did you get angry? And they said, oh, they needed that. The person I got angry at needed that. Or they deserved that. What is that? Is that an expression? Do you ever use that?
Yeah.
To validate your anger?
They had it coming.
He is someone who's used that, so he knows the expression. I do too, so I'm not criticizing. I just don't get angry at me. They had it coming, you know. They deserve that. Yeah, they had it coming is a more common phrase, I think. So from a Buddhist perspective, that's another projection of the mind that the other person is in a sense suitable to be abused. You know? This is like the plantation owner or something like that to their slaves, you know. They're suitable to be beaten, even if they didn't do anything. Oh, someone said, they didn't do what you thought they did. Oh, okay, that's okay. They're still suitable to be abused, you know. They're someone in a position compared to me that's not of importance. So that's a projection that can intensify the anger, a lack of compassion and empathy for others. So to withdraw that, to develop an understanding that exactly like yourself, others want to be happy and want to be free want to be free of suffering. In the same way, you don't want to be abused. Say the example, I don't know, Karen, is Karen here? Yeah, so Karen said so. At one point she spilled a glass of Chardonnay or some wine on mother's or mother-in-law's carpet, new carpet, and is like, oh, we would like to think that even we do something wrong, we would like to see the other people say, oh, it doesn't matter, it'll come, you know, it's just an important, you break the Ming vase, oh, don't worry about it. Has it ever, you know, we've probably experienced things like that when we've done something and others out of love and compassion assured us, you know, you're okay. They gave back love to us. Whereas we've probably also experienced something, even we did said something wrong to the clerk at the thing and they got angry. You didn't dot this I, you didn't do, you know. So knowing that they, the other person, is worthy of our love helps to take away that projection that they are suitable to be harmed, that they are, what was it again?
They had it coming,
you know. They don't have it. We don't, do we? We don't want to think we had it coming. We'd like to think even we make a mistake, even we do something bad, we'd like to say, okay, that's okay, I'll be, you know, you'll change, you know. Three things: impermanence, arrow in the target, which is karma, love and compassion. I'm just looking here because I have to end at a certain time. And the other one, the fourth one, is recognizing the anger-provoking situation or person as your spiritual guide, as your guru. Rather than, so here the projection is thinking, I don't need this. In fact, that's another kind of common expression I've heard. You know, at the end of some kind of conversation, one of the people will say, "I don't need this. Like, you can go away." You know, it's just like there's nothing for me in this situation that's beneficial. Am I giving the right context? Where do you say something like that? You know what I'm talking about? Is that the phrase that's used? I don't need. I don't. Was it?
I don't need this,
yeah. Someone's arguing with you and you know, you've tried to have some constructive conversation, they're not making any sense, you say, I don't need this, you just go away. So the thought of that this is this situation, unpleasant situation, is something not only I don't need, I don't want, I don't need. Interestingly, in Tibetan, the word for want and need is the same. You have to know from the context. Recognizing that this is something that is positive for you. It's not something you don't need that's totally, you know, has no value. This is giving you the chance to practice patience. This is giving you the chance to meditate on these other methods of patience. This person is, in a sense, your spiritual guide, your guru. So rather than seeing them as someone repellent, you might think the guru is always someone who, oh, love, you know, Patrick, you know. real guru does act that way in some cases, but the real guru is the one who can point out your ego right to you, get right to your root delusions. So sometimes you can actually, you know, thank the other person. Not superficially, like right now, oh, thanks a lot. Not like that, but, oh, thank you for pointing out my mistake, you know. Really sincerely believing that and understanding that this is something you do need. Okay, so I just wanted to share that with you in such a brief form. This is something we could elaborate any one of those 4 points for a week. And then the next point, but just to, some of you may have heard this before, these 4 points of the Kadampas to deal with anger, 4 antidotes. It gives you an understanding that when we have disturbed states of mind, also attachment, anger, jealousy, our mind has projected something upon the situation or person that's not really there. In the deepest case, we project a sense of inherent existence, if you know, those of you who are following. And the process of alleviating that problem is to, through wisdom, recognizing that your projection is not really valid, to understand the emptiness of that. So here to eliminate these four superimpositions of permanence, this is something I can't bear, that this is, the fault lies only there, understanding the karmic cause, basic karmic cause was yourself, that the other person is not suitable to be harmed, you know, that they deserve that, that they are actually like you, they're deserving of love, and that, in a sense, they're, it's not as though this is something that has no value for you at all, it's something which is teaching you that, that the situation or the person is your guru. Okay. So, we're going to recite now, as we've been doing, prayer, the praises of the 21 Taras, and then once, and then seven times the one verse, which is, I'll leave it up to Donna.
So the praises to the 21 Taras on page 191 of the Gold Prayer Book, and when we complete that recitation, we'll just turn the page to 198 for the short version. And if you have the white binder, I believe it's all there together on the green page. From your sublime abode at the Potala, O Tara, born from the green letter Tam, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times, Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara, you who rescue all who are destitute. To you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. O my prostrate to the noble transcendent liberator, homage Tara swift heroic, eyes like lightning instantaneous, from opening stamens of the Lord of Trivial's tear-born lotus, homage she whose faith combines 100 autumn moons at fullest, blazing with light rays resplendent as a thousand star collection, homage golden blue one lotus, water born in hand adorned, giving effort calm austerities, patience meditation her sphere, homage crown of Tathagatas, actions triumph without limit, relied on by conqueror's children, having reached every perfection, homage filling with Tutare, whom desire direction and space, trampling with her feet the seven worlds, able to draw forth all beings, homage worshipped by the All Lord, Chakra Agni Brahma Marut, honored by the host of spirits, corpses, Gandharvas, Yakshas, homage with her tray and pace sounds, destroying foes magic diagrams, her feet pressing left out right in, blazing in a raging fireplace, homage to her very dreadful, destroyer of Mara's champions, she was frowning lotus visage, who was slayer of all enemies,
homage with the heart.
Her fingers adorn her with three dual mudra, light ray masses all excited, all directions wills adorn her, homage she so joyous radiant, crown emitting garlands of light, mirthful laughing with Tutare, subjugating Mara's devas, homage she able to summon all earth guardians assembly, shaking frowning with her whom signs, saving from every misfortune, homage crown adorned with crescent, moon all ornaments most shining, Amitabha in her hair knot, sending out much light eternal, homage she mid wreath ablaze like eon ending fire abiding, righteous lip and joy surround you, troops of enemies destroying, homage she who strikes the ground with her palm and with her foot beats it, scowling with the letter whom the seven levels she does conquer, homage happy virtuous peaceful, she whose field is peace nirvana, she endowed with omen soha, destroyer of the great evil, homage she with joy surround it, tearing false bodies asunder, freeze with human knowledge mantra, arrangement of the ten letters, homage to her with seed letter, of the shape of syllable, whom by foot stamping shakes the three worlds, Meru, Mandara, and Vindya, homage holding in her hand the hair mark moon of Deva Lake form, with the spoken Tara and Pei, totally dispelling poison, homage she whom gods and their kings, and the kinnerets do honor.
armor. You know,
all joyful splendor, she dispels bad dreams and conflicts. Amid she whose two eyes bright with radiance of sun and full moon, with twice Hara and two Tare, she dispels severe contagion. Amid full of liberating power by the set of three natures, destroys host of spirits, yakshas, and raised corpses, supreme Tare. These praises with root mantras and prostrations, thus are 21. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow. Om, I prostrate to the goddess, foe destroyer, liberating Lady Tara. Homage to Tare, saviorist heroine, with Tare dispelling all fears, granting all benefits with Tare. To her with sound Soha I bow.
Thank you. So, Robbie, would you like me to say a few words first, or would you like to...
Yeah, if you can say a few words, and then I think Sandy...
Yeah. Oh, Sandy's going to say, okay. I thought you were going to say. So, I just wanted to, from the Dharma point of view, I just wanted to share with you a couple of thoughts. Why the existence of a center like Kadampa Center... Maybe all of you, maybe many of you at least, if not everyone, has found some refuge here over the weeks or months or years that you have come, some kind of benefit. And it's only through the existence of patrons that help in various ways. People who volunteer their services to continue the center, people who have contributed funds for various events, or for to pay the rent, to pay the bills for the propane, which we had a problem with the other day. We had to cancel the class. It's only through that this a center like this, which some lamas have said is almost like a beacon, you know, that sends out, even just its very existence here, sends out energy to the surroundings to calm. All of you that may get a little bit calmer mind, having come here as emissaries later, maybe your life is a little bit changed. Maybe you'll practice patience. You know, you won't get angry at someone, and that will leave some imprint in their mind as a result of this center existing. So, from my point of view, and from my teacher's point of view, one of the greatest kinds of offerings we can make is to help to perpetuate the teachings. My teacher, Geshe Zopa, used to say, more so than doing also all other kinds of virtuous practices, to perpetuate the Dharma through an institution like this is one of the greatest virtuous actions you can do. My teacher, Geshe Zopa, used to say a verse from Shantideva's Bodhisattva Charyavatara, that the one sole medicine to cure all the ills of sentient beings is the Holy Dharma. So if we can help to perpetuate that, not only in our own practice, that's very important, but also through an institution like this, is very, very good. So with that said, I think Sandy has some words. Sandy, is it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I just need to...
Of course.
Let you all know. First of all, I just want to thank Venerable George for his wonderful, wonderful visit of the last 2 weeks. And if you can stick around this afternoon for the remainder of his teaching on the method to meditate on emptiness, you'll get a lot of benefit from it. That said, we heard about impermanence this morning, so his visit is passing on, and coming in the next couple of weeks, we have some things that you'll want to know about. Tuesday is a Buddha holy day, Labab Duchen. This marks the day when the Buddha, who had been up in a god realm to teach his mother and thank her for her kindness, he returned to the human realm to continue teaching and bring all the wonderful Dharma teachings that we are now benefiting from. So on Tuesday, we will have a Shakyamuni Buddha Puja at 5:30 p.m. And so please come if you are able. There's lots of benefit in doing practice on a Buddha holy day. And then next Sunday, which is the Sunday before Thanksgiving, we're going to get a jump on the holiday with our own little Thanksgiving celebration here in the Gampa with Geshe Sangpo. He's going to teach a little bit about the benefits of a practice of gratitude, and we'll all have a chance to share what we feel grateful for, and then we're going to make a Thanksgiving prayer flag. So we'll all have benefit in that, and then this will be Geshe Sangpo's last Sunday before he goes to India to hear some teachings from His Holiness and attend to some business at Sarah J. So it's also an opportunity to thank him for what he contributes to the center and send him on his way. And then in 2 weeks, Geshe Gelug will return on Sunday morning, the 1st of December. And take it away, Sandy. Q&A is with Aaron in the back today, right after the teachings.
Okay, I will be speaking directly into the mic this time. I've been down with a cold, so this is, I promise I'm no longer contagious, but this is a prime example of, I've not had the opportunity to come and hear your teachings in person, but thankfully, because Chris, raise your hand back there, because we have this streaming, there's people like me that are able to receive our teachings, and I just want to do a personal thank you to Chris for what he does, because sometimes some of us just can't be here. I'm trying to think about the best way to approach this, because again, I'm cold medicine, so I'm not thinking as clearly as I normally am. But we're in the middle of our annual appeal, and one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is the fact that we truly are living in very exciting times here at our center, more so than I think many other times that we've had. I think all along this 28-plus year journey that the Kadapa Center has had, past, present, and future, while I try to think about this stuff, that all of the people that came before that created the center that I now have the opportunity to come to, all the things that they have done, and starting in a home and then moving to the basement of a dojo and then purchasing this building, and then now we have this opportunity that in the past just few months and very few years, we've now owned this building, and we have just celebrated Geshe Gelug's 20th anniversary here, and the things that we're trying to plant the seeds for our future here at Kadapa Center. So we truly are living in these very exciting times here as we always change the impermanence of Kadapa Center, and always benefiting each other and what goes on. And then I try to think about, what does Kadapa Center actually mean to me? You know, this whole, everybody always asks me, why do you do all these things that you do? Because I do wear many hats here, as does everybody else here. I mean, I can look around and see all of the volunteers and all the people that work here and all the things that everybody does, and we all wear many hats and we all do many things. But I try to think of why, because people ask me, well, why do you do all this? The benefit that I receive is far beyond anything that I do here. The fact, I try to think about what actually is Kadapa Center. Is the Kadapa Center, is it this building? Is it these grounds? You know, is it all of the things that we have in this Gampa? Is it our teachers? Is it the teachings? Is it our community? What actually is Kadapa Center to me? I try to think about these things. And for me, Kadapa Center is all of those things. It is a place where I come to receive these teachings that help me. They truly help me. I'm a better person because of these teachings. I have access to amazing teachers that explain the teachings because I need help. And not only do we have these amazing opportunities to have visiting teachers come, we have two Geshe's here, Geshe Galik and Geshe Sampo. Many centers have no Geshe's. We have two, and they speak English. I mean, this amazing opportunity that we have occasionally to get a visiting teacher, and then to always have our own teachers. And then we have people like Robbie and Don and Steep and Hamid and our own lay teachers that they help me. This is good for my mind, and it really does benefit me. And then the community. You guys are all my friends. You are either the friends that I currently have that mean so much to me, or your future friends. I recognize a lot of you. I've not gotten the chance to know a lot of you yet, but I promise I'm going to try, because you all are my community. This is my place. You are my happy place. Even in the times that I'm challenged here, just like your teaching was so perfect for me, I needed exactly everything you said today, and I appreciate it very much so. Sometimes those teachings just seem to just come right to you and are very effective for what's going on in your life. You did that for me today. I have that a lot, which is an awesome thing about here. But this opportunity that I have to learn and grow, the challenges that I face here sometimes are those opportunities to use the practice that we're learning. Because I learned this here, I'm a better friend, I'm a better wife, I'm a better mother. You know, so this benefits me more than you will ever know. You all benefit me more than you will ever know. And I'm appreciative of all of it. So anything that I can give back here, whether it's my time, whatever small talents I have, or whatever financial aid that I can do to keep this going. There's an old kind of a statement that I just love. I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit. If I have the opportunity to plant a seed to grow a tree that I'm never going to sit under, but somebody else will, I want that opportunity. That's why I'm trying to plant the seed now to create the causes and conditions for Kadampa Center to do in the future everything that it is doing for me. And so that's really why I give, and that's why I want to inspire others to do some of that same type of giving. Just reach into your hearts. Think about it. I think we've got with our annual appeal, so that's the whole reason of why we want to plant seeds, why we want to create the opportunities for you all to do this. Now I'm going to segue into the commercial side of it. She gets to hold it. So this is kind of our challenge situation that we've got as we do our look to the future in the 2020 annual appeal. We actually have some challenges. These are pretty good. I don't know who these people are yet. That's right. Yeah, Vanna White. Okay, so we have several challenges going on. We need to scoot. Oh, hello, streaming, and I know some of you. Usually I'm one of you. So Jill, I've got a cheat sheet on the back here, so she's going to hold this. She takes care of the things that I need. Oh, okay, I can just do it. This is a comedy of errors. So we have one $5,000 donor. They're going to increase their donation by $5,000 this year if three others do the same. So we've got one donor who's going to increase their donation by $5,000 if she can inspire or he can inspire three others to increase their giving by $5,000. We have one donor that's going to increase their giving by $3,000 this year to inspire four others to do the same. Are you going to have a board tracking all this? Okay. You're going to mark it. Okay. So we also have one donor who will increase their giving by $1,000 this year to encourage five others to do the same. Plus, if five others actually do it, they're going to throw another $1,000 in the pot. And one donor will increase their giving by $300 this year to encourage nine others to increase their gift this year by that much more. So we always have some challenges and stuff. We've always got a lot of people that are willing to step up and inspire others. Your service means just as much. Your volunteer time means just as much. We are a mostly volunteer organization. So please, while these are inspiring, you've got many ways to give. And then I guess we've got three giveaways. NCMA passes to Frida. There's going to be a winner for that. We'll do that drawing on December 8th.
If you pledge.
If you pledge, you're going to be put into a pot to win one of these prizes.
And not just this pledge.
Okay. you should do this part, actually. The $25 gift certificate to Tibetan Himalayan Gifts, and we're going to be selecting a winner at the end of the appeal. And we also have another Ocracoke plate with a $150 gift card to select a winner at the end of the appeal. Am I going to guess that that's you, Mr. Strievel? Thank you. Violet, I think I need to win that one, don't you? So again, while this is all fun, and we do have all of these different opportunities, and we do have some prizes and stuff, the bottom line is, please think about what Kanapa Center means to you, and why you give and how you give. There are opportunities. This is part of what we have this beautiful gift here, and it's what are we going to do to sustain it and to grow it in the future. So thank you so much.
If you haven't received this in the mail, would you pass this? Raise your hand if you haven't received it.
If you have not received your annual appeal, we can pass this out. One of the things, even if you haven't looked at this, please do, because the artwork was done by one of our designers, and she's done a beautiful job. So appreciate Anne Scavardius. Again, everything that we do, so many people are giving of their time and talents, and just to appreciate that beyond the message that it says to Stephen, the beauty that one of our members created for us, is, we should appreciate that too. So again, thank you. I promise not to breathe on you. Thank you so much.
May I finish? So just quickly, dedication mentally, due to the merits that we've created this morning, that the center is creating, may we quickly achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. Thank you very much.